Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and joining me from the City of Love is Pat Dunford. Pat, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks, TT. I'm calling from Paris, which is known as the City of Lights. I don't want to...
It's not the City of Love?
I don't want to correct you to be pedantic, but I don't know what the City of Love is, and I don't want to give our listeners the wrong idea.
I thought it was the City of Love.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it's...
When I Google it, it says it refers to Paris, amongst various other things. City of Lights, I thought, was Vegas. I guess that's very American skewed for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so if we sound a little different, I'm getting over cold. Pat's on a different microphone, but we're here to talk about Iceman and Shadowcat, but Pat makes me do Sleeve It or Heave It. And today, Pat, I think we're doing Children of the Atom. Is that right?
That's right. And let me tell you, TT, Sleeve It or Heave It is my favorite thing about this podcast. And we're going to keep on doing it. Children of the Atom, an uncanny X-Men active card. An uncanny X-Men character may play the card, and if you do, you get to remove all special conditions from the character, and that's not all, TT, because they also gain one power for each special condition that's removed.
So this just kind of falls in the suite of like X-Men cards that are pretty good, but you can only take five. So I like it, but I don't love it.
Yeah,
it I tends think to make my fair. Roster and rarely my five.
Yeah, I like this card. I think it's the most generically useful of the X-Men cards, by which I mean you can just put it in your roster if you don't have a plan for it, and it will be useful. Whereas the others, like we talked about on previous episodes, like to me, my X-Men First Class, they are better than this card, but you put them in with a specific plan. Right. And it's usually a turn one plan. And if you don't have a specific plan, then I think you can take Children of the Atom. Now, obviously, yeah. It gets muscled out by these other cards. And I think having good turn one plans is obviously powerful. So I don't blame X-Men players for not taking it. The question is, TT, at what point does this card start to look really good? If I have, for example, let's say I start us off on the very low end, right? We got Honey Badger, and she's got poison on her. Am I happy that I've got Children of the Atom?
Probably not.
Right. If on the other extreme end, right, we got Cable, and he is incinerated, shocked, and staggered. Am I happy that I got Children of the Atom?
Nah, probably not.
What?
I assumed you were just going to keep going until you named all of the status ailments, so I thought I was supposed to just say no.
No. He's a five threat character. He's got three conditions on him.
Ask me again, Pat.
Okay, I got Cable, and he's got bleed, poison, and stagger. Am I happy to play Children of the Atom in that situation?
Yes, Pat, I'm very happy.
Exactly. Now you're getting it, TT. Okay, so the point is, there's a big difference, right? Because you need to care about... how much does the condition affect the character and how useful is the character and how debilitating is the condition? Like there are some characters where removing shock or stagger is probably a good enough use for this card. And there's others where it's not. And of course, the power gain can be really important. So I've had situations where I've played this on a character to remove one condition. I didn't really care about the condition, but I wanted to get to that second point of power. Right, to then go off and do a charge. So I guess what I'm saying is this card's value varies a lot. The thing is, though, for it to be really great requires you to have expensive characters and for your opponent to be throwing powerful conditions around. And those things definitely can happen. But can you guarantee that they're going to happen at a point where you're really glad you've got this card?
Yeah, unless you bring your own status effects, like some weird X-Men Strucker hybrid build, right? You just can't. I mean, Pirate. Anyway, I used the card with Wolverine way back in the Dark Ages for exactly what you said. If you get one or two more points of power on Wolverine, right, that used to be really impactful. But as the games kind of progressed, the level for what a good card has been has kind of increased. It can make my 10. It just rarely makes my 5. I do think it's a good meta call. If certain lists become really prevalent, I think this card could be really good. But right now, I would rather do abusive things on turn 1.
Yeah. As a meta call, I think you're right. It could be useful. I like it in theory against all webbed up. to protect a character. Although it's an active card, it doesn't have to be the activated character that plays it. So you could activate one character and then also play this card to remove slow on a different character to protect them before they activate during the All Webbed Up turn. That seems pretty cool. Maybe that's something that's worth exploring. I like your point, TT, about doing silly things to give yourself conditions. Like, yeah, you've got things like Hood and Arnim Zola that give you bleed. But we talked about Nightcrawler a couple of weeks ago, right? And of course, Nightcrawler's team tactics card, Mass Transit, gives him stagger, which you can remove with for the low, low price of two tactics cards. You too can play Mass Transit with less of a downside.
Yeah, so I think I'm sleeving this, but it's like a tentative, cautious, back-of-the-box sleeve.
Yeah, I don't blame you for not finding room in your 10, because I think it's competing with the universal cards that protect you for just generically useful things, right? And maybe you think something like Fallback is going to be more generically useful than this card. But I think it's up there in the conversation with those cards. The other thing I want to mention about it, TT, is do you remember how much you and I used to decry Crew of the Milano as being a terrible Guardians of the Galaxy card? This is the card where the Guardians of the Galaxy team can pay one power each to remove special conditions.
I'm aware of the card, yes.
Yeah, do you remember you and I used to think that card was garbage?
I do.
Yeah, and now it's a pretty popular card. And do you know what changed?
Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Exactly, right? As soon as Guardians got an affiliated powerhouse that it was well worth making protected from special conditions, the card suddenly became great. And the same thing could happen with X-Men, right? Is Cable that affiliated powerhouse? Well, he's not that far away. He's very powerful. He's a five-threat character that you want to have good activations with. So I think it's worth considering with him, and it's worth keeping an eye on for the future.
And yet another reason why I don't like tier lists, they don't age very well, Pat. They don't age well.
That's true. Cable would have gone up quite a few tiers.
All right, so today we are talking about the wonderful Miss Kitty and Iceman. Is that right, Pat?
Yeah, so this is the final of the three X-Men boxes that came out this month.
And I thought we could talk about the Iceman. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah. Do you keep passing this over to me because you want me to read the card?
No, I'm just trying to be polite. I don't want to be rude. You're in the City of Lights.
Okay. Iceman, a.k.a. Bobby Drake. He has 4 physical, 3 energy, 3 mystic defense, 5 stamina on either side, 3 threat, size 2, medium mover. He's on a medium base, so he's fairly mobile. He's got 2 attacks. The first is Freezing Blast. It's a beam 3, 4 dice energy attack that gives a flat power after each attack with a wild slow. And he's got Chill, range 3, 7 dice, 3 cost energy spender with wild stagger. How are we feeling about him so far, TT?
He's fine.
Totally fine. I'm carrying on because there's not much on this card. We've got Freeze and Fade. This is Hit and Run by Another Name. Action. This character immediately makes an attack action followed by a move action. The difference is that he counts as size 5 during the move action, so he functionally gets to fly while he freezes and fades. And of course, it can only be used once a turn. Then we've got Ice Slide, 2 cost reactive power. During his activation, when Iceman begins a move action within 2 of another allied character of size 2 or less, you can use the superpower. After Iceman's move is resolved, you place the allied character within 2 of its current position. Once again, this can be used once a turn. This is the same as Airlift on Sam Wilson, Captain America. And then, unlike these other characters, we've got Cold Snap, an all-new superpower. This is a weird one, TT. It says, when an enemy character ends a move action or an attack action within range 2 of Iceman, it gains the slow special condition. If they already had the slow special condition, they suffer 1 damage instead. So, what do you think about this guy now?
I think he's fine. Ready to talk about Kitty?
No, we're going to talk about Iceman, damn it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can do better than fine.
Can I? I think he's a fine character. He's fine. I think Cold Snap is the most interesting thing. I'm not saying it's the best. I always love whenever there's non-attack damage. I can toss out there. I've just always been a fan of it. Could you build some weird Iceman Hydra list that puts slow out there everywhere? Sure, that'd be kind of cool. I don't know. Maybe toss him in with the webs. I have no idea. Yeah, Freeze and Fade, I think it's a decent improvement to hit and run. I don't know how many times I've tried to use hit and run. A good guy, I only wish I had flying. Ice Slide's fine. Like you said, we've seen this superpower by a bunch of different names. Mm-hmm. Beam Builders are cool. Beam 3, I don't know. Seems fine, Pat. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, look, I agree. This guy is not the spiciest, but I think he's got enough going on to be a solid character. Just having a beam that gives you automatic power is a good attack, right? It's a good builder. We see this on plenty of different characters, and it's always solid. This one is only doing 4 dice of damage, so his damage output is not great, but his power generation with this beam is really good. And of course, Wild Slow on a builder is pretty interesting. And obviously has synergy with Cold Snap. His spender is whatever, right? It's just like an incredibly generic spender.
Yeah.
7 dice, 3 power with a useful wild effect. It's perfectly usable, but not exciting. His suite of powers, I think, is pretty good. Like, there's not much on the card, but what is on the card is good, right? Hit and Run is a really good superpower that synergizes really well with having a beam. Right, we've seen it before on models like Crossbones Merciless Merc, for example, and this guy is faster than Crossbones, so he should be able to position pretty well to use his attacks. And Ice Slide is a really useful effect that also synergizes well with Hit and Run, in that you can use the Ice Slide and then use Fuse and Frayed, and you can be making a move action, 2 attack actions, and also placing a character all in the same activation. And with the Freezing Blast power generation, I think it's reasonable to expect that Iceman can do that kind of play around about round 2 or round 3 of the game, certainly later on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It depends on his power coming into round 2, right? Is he able to attack someone without moving? Otherwise, he's got to move up. Then if you have the power, you can freeze and fade, but then you're just kind of getting back to safety. Like, his ability to double attack is really dependent. But yeah, I think he's fine.
Yep. And then, I mean, Cold Snap is the unique thing though, right? Cold Snap is unlike any other superpower you've ever seen before. And
no, that's why I'm most excited about that, for sure.
Yeah, and I think you're right to be excited about that. It's incredibly hard to evaluate how good this is, right? Because it's super situational and it depends on your opponent, right? It's triggered by your opponent's actions with their characters. So no way to really pin a value on this or to predict how impactful it's going to be from game to game, other than to say it's going to punish characters that for whatever reason need to get close to Iceman, right? Like, if you're a model like with a charge and a range to attack, right? And there's tons of those from Thor through to Rogue, Valkyrie, Zemo, whatever, right? Then those kind of models hate Cold Snap, right? Because they charge, that's a move action, they get slowed, they do their charge attack, that's an attack action, they take a damage. They've got another attack action, they take another damage. Right? So it can stack up pretty well in those kind of circumstances. That's its best case. And of course, its worst case is, well, your opponent just attacks you from outside of that range or doesn't need to get close to Iceman. And then it is obviously not very good.
I think your worst case is Iceman just gets killed or dazed. Because he's not particularly durable.
Yes, I mean, for sure. He's just 5 stamina on either side, 4-3-3 defenses. I think his defense is positioning with Freeze and Frayed, but he's only got range 3 attacks. So if he wants to have really optimal activations, he wants to activate within range 3 of a target, and that is a danger zone, right?
And that's what I mean about him just having chunky activations, right? Ideally, you want to activate within range 3 of... ideally 2 models, let's say 1. You beam the first one, or you freeze and fade, attack the first one, move in range to beam 2 or 3 people, beam them, and then you're stuck in melee? Or
then you're in trouble. Yeah. Then you're really hoping for Cold Snap to save you, and it's not going to save you.
Exactly. I've left 4 people on 1 hit point. They're not going to remember Cold Snap. That's why he just seems fine to me. I think we've talked about it before. Characters kind of live and die in my mind with their affiliation tags. And right now he just has X-Men. Do you know how many 3 threats X-Men have right now, Pat?
I don't know, but I'm going to guess they've got about 8.
8 on the nose. Good job, right? Storm, Beast, Domino, Magic, Gambit, X-23, Iceman, and Shadowcat. Like, they just have an abundance of choices. And the only thing he does that's really unique is Cold Snap. And while I think Cold Snap's good, I don't think it's game-changing.
Yeah, the other thing he does that's semi-unique is he's got a medium base, medium move for the 3-threat, right? Which is next to Beast. And just that stat line is really helpful for X-Men to do turn one shenanigans. So I can see some people might prefer him to Beast. And
but you just said it was unique, and then you said Beast also has it. Who's in
I said semi-unique.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He
I'm
and
not
Beast
familiar with that oxymoronical phrase there.
Yeah. Not quite unique. One last thing to say about Cold Snap. Like, this guy has got a beam attack, right? So maybe there's a situation in central fights where he sits in the middle and does his beams. And Cold Snaps a bunch of stuff, like if he's in the middle of the researcher and you have models in your team designed to protect him. Maybe there's some cute gimmick where you take him in a team that has things like bodyguards and heroes for hire and other ways to move attacks around. And he is constantly doing chip damage to the enemy team, where he's standing in the middle of the scrum and anytime any of them attack, they're taking damage.
I just think he gets deleted, but maybe. I also think, like, if we're fighting in the middle of the map, to me, slow just has a diminished effect.
Well, slow is turning on Cold Snap, right? You slow them all, and then when they attack, they all start taking damage.
And that's why I think, like, maybe him and webs will be interesting.
Yeah.
Because he can do some movement shenanigans for him. The medium on medium is decent for them. But again, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I mean, what X-Men have, how many 3-threat characters with a beam?
With a beam?
At least two others.
Well, with a beam that's a builder. I mean, Gambit's got a spender.
Storm has a flat one, right?
Oh, nothing. Storm has a flat one. Storm's one, both of those beams are, well, one's a build, one's a spender. But Storm's beam is way worse than this beam. Although, of course, you can build up to 6 dice. And then it's quite a lot better.
I mean, it's a worse typing without a wild effect. And it doesn't generate power. So yeah, sure, we'll go with way worse. That's fine.
Yeah, way worse.
Yeah.
All right. I've talked about Iceman long enough. Let's get to the star of the show, Kitty Pryde.
Is she the star?
Well, you weren't very high on Iceman. I hope you prefer her.
Sure. I'm excited about the Tactus cards.
Me too. They are the exciting thing in this box. All right, TT, tell me about Shadowcat.
Well, she's a 3/3/3. That costs 3, size 2, long mover, 5 stamina on both sides. Catherine Kitty Pryde, Pryde spelled with a Y. She has Phasing Strike, range 2, 4 dice physical attack, power equal to damage done. During the attack, the defender does not add exclamation points, some people call them crits, in the defense roll towards total success and can't add additional dice to the defense roll as a result of crits. We've seen this before on many attacks, just as Wild Sidestep. After the attack is off, place this character within 1 of itself. That, I think, is pretty cool. She says, get him, Lockheed. Lockheed is, of course, her dragon. It's a range 3, 4 dice energy attack, flat builder with a wild incinerate. She has intangible assault. I think I said that word right. Range 3, 7 dice physical attack, cost 3. During the attack, the defending character, well, it does the crit negation again, and then wild ghosted, place her within 2 of herself. So, Pat, what do you think of the top half of the card of Catherine Kitty Pryde?
Okay, her stats are unremarkable. You could even say bad at 3/3/3 with 5
borderline,
stamina.
Borderline, bad.
She is fragile, although her superpowers that we'll get to later help.
Long mover is good, though.
Long mover is great. She is the first X-Men affiliated character who's a long mover. And being a long mover is relevant for a lot of their turn one shenanigans, just like having a medium basis. So I think she'll be popular with X-Men players just for that reason. As a utility piece to do nonsense, she is a good, cheap option that's affiliated. So I think her L move is super relevant for her affiliation. Got no idea if she's in other affiliations. I assume not. Then for her attacks, you said we've seen the crit negation on Phasing Strike and Intangible Assault before. We have seen it, but it's not that common, right?
No.
A couple of spenders maybe in the whole game. It's not really something we see often. And I think it's worth mentioning that this ability is deceptively powerful. It scales with your opponent's defense dice. So the more defense dice they roll, the better it is for you, as in, you know, the better your effective damage is going to be compared to as if you didn't have this rule. And of course, it has extra synergy against models who are better at critting, like Reality Gem or Domino or what have you. As a rule of thumb, her four dice phasing strike is about as good as a five dice strike normally. And yep. her spender is actually really good damage, right? At seven dice base plus this rule, it's a high damage spender for a three threat character, like more like eight or nine dice.
Yeah, I think they're both fine. I mean, if she just had a five dice builder, I don't think we'd be particularly excited. I do think it's a good shout out to explain how it does skew the dice math. And Assault is fine. I think it's a reasonable spender. I'm not upset if I have to dump it into there.
Yeah, the reason it's worth calling out is actually this character's damage output is quite decent for three threat, right? She's not at the tippity top of the damage spectrum, but it's very respectable. It's above average. And if you didn't know the maths on this crit negation stuff, you might be tricked into thinking her damage was bad. You just see, oh, it's a four dice builder. Oh, it's a seven dice spender. This sucks. Actually, no, it's pretty good. And then, of course, she has the option with Gellum Lockheed to throw it at Incinerate and get automatic power generation. So I think that attack is going to get a bit of use as well.
Yeah. She does have a couple different ways she can spend power, though. She has Phase Rush, which is a two-cost active power that places her within two. She can only use this once per turn. She's reactive, can't touch this. Two cost when an ally character within two, excuse me, when this or an ally character within two is targeted by a physical or energy attack or would make a dodge roll, the character may use a superpower. This character adds two dice to defense or dodge roll. If this character or the ally character is pushed or thrown by the special rule, after the effect is resolved, you may place the push or thrown character within one of itself. So, fine.
Did you mention stealth?
I didn't mention stealth yet. That's the last thing. She's stealth.
Oh, stealth.
Yeah. I think it's a good attack suite. Like I said, the long mover is the thing that excites me the most. I think her attacks are fine.
Yeah. I mean, having three good attacks is helpful. Of course, you're only going to make one with each action. But yeah, her attacks are totally reasonable. Her mobility is really good, right? As a long mover plus phase with rush, two,
yeah.
plus the triggers on her builder and her spender. Like, she's pretty mobile. The question really is, how do you rate can't touch this?
Not super highly. First of all, the wording's really clunky. Second of all, like, I've just never been that high at adding defense dice. I think the best thing it does is the placing itself after the fact. That is, I am way more excited about than the defense dice, personally.
Yeah, the defense dice is weird because normally defense dice are pay two power, give a model two dice at range three. We see that on like Doctor Strange and Cable and probably in a few other places. This one is pay two power, it's only range two, it's only physical energy attacks, but it also has to dodge, which is not nothing, right? Extra defense with dodge is pretty cool. And yeah, this whole thing about after your pushed or thrown character is pushed or thrown, they get to place within one of themselves. Situationally useful, certainly not incredible, right? There's plenty of situations. Firstly, this doesn't stop the collision damage, which is often a reason why you might want to throw models. And it can help mitigate the displacement, but it won't fully stop the displacement, right? And I haven't done the maths on this. If you've got your small base character TT and they stand directly on top of an objective, if I throw them short and they bounce back range one towards the objective, can they get in range of it?
I don't think so if I was directly on top. I'd have to do the math.
Yeah.
I'm on the front side of it and you're pushing me away from, like through it, if that makes sense, I can land up back onto it, obviously, but I'm not 100%. I feel directly on top.
So they're going to be a little bit over 3 inches away because they'll have the rim of their base, which will overlap the objective, and then they'll be thrown a short throw is about 3.1 or something inches. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to place towards the objective range one.
Yeah, but that,
they're going to have their base, which is a little right? over an inch, and then yeah. they can be within range one of it. So it's almost exactly the same distance. So I wish we'd done our homework and checked this beforehand.
Yeah, someone else will.
It's real close. So with good positioning and the use of this, you might be able to mitigate some throws, especially if your opponent isn't able to maximize distance because of terrain or other models and that kind of thing.
Yeah, again, I think it'll be situationally pretty good.
Yeah. And of course, it will do other clever things, like you might be able to use it to avoid a second attack action from that character or get into a favorable position elsewhere on the table.
Yeah, or maybe you can obviously bounce farther out, right, with stealth or something out to get even more out of range. So lots of options. So yeah, and that's the thing I'm most excited about her card. Again, her attacks are fine. I do appreciate that she's a long mover. Similar to Iceman, I'm worried she just explodes, but see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, she at least has stealth and can't touch this to help her. I think when she has a lot of power, she's looking pretty good because her spender is really strong. Phase Rush is useful. Can't touch this is useful to have as an option, right? But
yeah, I just struggle to see how she gets a lot of power other than just like first activation off Dazed.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a spike from her builder, which isn't very good at spiking considering it's only 4 dice base. Or it's going to be taking a little bit of damage and then having a good retaliation. And of course, it can just be leaderships, right? And as we discussed last week, 2 out of 3 X-Men leaders have power-generating leaderships.
Totally fair there. So, yeah, I'm fine on Kitty. I don't honestly have that much else to say about her.
Yeah.
I like Lockheed. Like,
I mean, I feel like both of these characters are just kind of solid 3-threat role players where they do slightly useful things. They're decently mobile. I don't think they're incredibly impressive. I don't think other affiliations are going to go out of their way to splash them. But I think... They're useful enough to be playing at X-Men for sure.
I 100% agree with you. And I think if they ever get a second affiliation tag, these could be incredibly ubiquitous with the second affiliation. But one of the things we've talked about is X-Men is kind of flooded with options. It's almost getting to like an Avenger-sized roster. We just have a lot of choices in them. So good for X-Men. Good to have more choices. They got a long mover. That's cool.
Yep. Here, here. Okay, TT. The moment's come. We can talk about the tactics cards you're so excited about. Which one do you want to start with? About
that. Let's start with Hold Still. We were just talking about the Shadow Cat.
Okay. Hold Still. Unaffiliated. Active action. Shadow Cat spends 3 power to play the card. You choose an enemy character within range 3 of her. You place her within 1 of that character. And then you get to make the phase disruption attack. So range 1 attack. It's 6 dice energy. It has wild nerve damage, which makes them drop their objective tokens, and double wild shifted after the attack's resolved. You place the target within range 1 of Shadow Cat.
So let's talk about active action before. We kind of blipped over it, I think, 2 episodes ago, Pat, but like this is a brand new thing we're seeing on tactics now, right? And it should be intuitive, but I do think it's worth us just taking 30 seconds to explain it.
Yeah, so it was introduced in the new core set. And it means you play this card during your activation, and it takes 1 of your 2 actions for that activation. So Shadow Cat has to play this in her activation. It uses 1 of her 2 actions
to make this. This cleans up a bunch of like weird timing things or kind of vague stuff that we used to see on tactics.
Yes. So that's helpful. It removes the ambiguity of does this tactics card attack count as an action or not? Which honestly, you kind of had to handle on a case-by-case basis. That aside, TT, is this attack good?
I think the attack is good. I think whether the card is good is a totally different question. Like, if
we need to know if the attack is good before we don't. Like, if the attack's not good, this card is obviously not good, right?
But, yeah, that's a good point. But there's other stuff. There's a place effect.
Yeah, true. Within range 1 of per target. Yeah, I mean, that's true.
I think the attack is good.
I think the attack is. Okay, it's like a really bad Venom Blast.
Yep.
Okay, it's got a
Venom Blast is a really good attack.
Yes, but the reason Venom Blast is good is because it guarantees that they drop their objectives, right? And you build your whole plan with Venom Blast. Yeah, I just mean that's the reason why most good things are good. But
if she just had Phase Disruption on her card, we would be excited about it.
Oh yeah, I'd love it. I would be thinking that this model is great.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair, because like a bad Venom Blast is a good effect in context.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. Now, the fact that I only get 1 of these and it's on a tactics card and it costs me 3 power, even if Phase Disruption costs me 3 power, that would be fine. But the fact that it comes in a tactics card, now I'm not super excited about it.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. It's a pretty high price to play for an effect that's not that special. And really, the problem I have with it is the fact that it just might not work, right? The fact that you need to roll a wild on 6 dice to get the really exciting effect of them dropping their extracts.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I like the timing on it. I like that they thought about dropping the objective before you move your opponent. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's worth its spot.
Yeah, I'd also add that this has the same problem we see with a lot of character tactics cards give them attacks, which is this card is very similar to Kitty Pryde's Normal Spender and costs the same amount of power. And I don't know why this keeps happening, but they're both range 3 attacks that cost 3 power, and they both give a replace effect. Intangible Assault does more damage, so the only reason to use this card then is to really... If the minute differences in the place effects matter to you situationally, or if you want to gamble on the wild.
Yep, sounds correct.
And that makes this card way worse, in my opinion. Like, on a character that didn't have a good way to do an attack or a place.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, like, the opportunity cost is just, like, it's such a marginal upgrade compared to her normal spender. Sure. I just don't think you should really be playing this card, honestly. I think it's a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great card. I just wanted to suppose. I do think it's a good attack, though. Just not a great card.
Yeah,
Let's stick with Shadowcat. Let's talk about another attack. Faithful Companion. Mm. Guardian Dragon. Let's go, Lockheed. Range dash. 5 dice energy attack. This attack ignores range and line of sight. Wild Incinerate. It's an unaffiliated reactive. When an allied Shadowcat or magic is dealt damage by an enemy attack or superpower, after the effect is resolved, she may play this card. The character that played this card immediately makes an attack shown above targeting the enemy character that dealt her damage. So, Pat, what do you think about free retaliation attacks?
I really enjoy this card. I think it's so cute that you get to send your Guardian Dragon out to get revenge when your model gets attacked. Oh, it's adorable. And retaliation damage is interesting, right? Because when it is low threat, it's pretty negligible and easy for your opponent to ignore. But there comes a point with retaliation damage where if it can reasonably threaten to daze a character, interrupt their activation, it starts to massively impact how your opponent plays, right? And they may, if their model is low on stamina, they may decide that it's not worth the risk to attack Shadowcat or Magic when you have this card.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's always that double-edged sword of, like, you could literally just juice them up. Like, if you need to do 3 points of damage, do you do the attack? Because if you give them 2, they get an extra spender into you. But I do like it. It's a free attack. Ignoring range and line of sight, so if they Helios laser you, you can always send the dragon after them if somehow you lived. Shadow or Magic don't do a great job of living through attacks. Like, you're kind of just hoping and praying. But I think it's an interesting card.
Yeah, worth noting that you can't play this card. Actually, I'm pretty sure you can't play this card if your model is dazed, right?
Correct.
Because you play it
because
after
the character has to play the card, correct, and they would be dazed at that point.
Yeah. I got confused because it said when an allied Shadowcat or Magic is dealt damage, and I thought, hold on. You're dealt damage before you're dazed, but then it says after the effect is resolved, you play the card, and at that point you'd be dazed, and you can't do it. And obviously you can't do it if you're KO'd either. Okay, cool. Glad I cleared that up for myself. I think this card is good enough to play, but because it's situational and reactive, I'm not sure that you're going to reach for it that often. Because it's not a proactive card that you build your game plan around.
No, I agree. And we talked about it before. Like, they're just... the bar for tactics cards keeps getting high. When we started Sleeve It or Heave It, however many years ago that was, it was just a lot easier for us to get excited because there were just, honestly, fewer cards.
Yes.
Like, one of the problems... Not problem. Sure. One of the problems with MCP's design space is your ability to take everything... means you're competing with so many things for any given slot. So I think Faithful Companion is fine. I think it's a better attack than Hold Still. I don't think it's worth taking.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I don't hate taking this card, but I think we can do better.
I agree.
Cool.
All right. Talking about doing better, what about Untapped Potential? Pat, do you still think you have Untapped Potential?
Well, I'd like to think we all do, TT.
Okay, buddy. Well, you're about to be a father, so yeah, I think you definitely have some untapped potential.
Well, we'll find out. But in the meantime, I'm going to read this card. Untapped potential, unaffiliated, active. If it's Iceman's activation, Emma Frost can play the card. During the activation, superpowers and attacks used by Iceman can spend power from him or from Emma Frost, and his attacks get an extra die. Additionally, during the activation, Iceman may use superpowers on his stat card any number of times, even if they say they can be used only once.
So, I do like shenanigans.
It's a lot of shenanigans in this card.
And this, the potential for shenanigans on this card are high.
Untapped, you might say.
Oh, I see what you did there. So yeah, I'm all for this card. If you're going to play like a meme list and this is what you want to do and you're like ice theme, let's go cold snap. Yeah, I'm all aboard. Let's play untapped potential. I want to freeze and fade 27 times. Okay, you can't. How many times?
You can't. So one of the secret on this card is, well, both of the abilities need actions. So even though you can use them any number of times, you can in fact use them twice instead of once.
All right, no, man, I'm out.
Well, I mean, that's still pretty good. Nope, you can freeze and fade twice.
I just went from 27 in my head, Pat, to 2. I'm not excited anymore.
I mean, you certainly couldn't do the 27 times. That would take like 54 power. But
yeah, but you keep generating power off of each freeze and fade.
Yeah, because they cost actions, the high point for this card, the best case scenario, is that you have two attacks that each get extra die. So this could be beams, right? So maybe you have 2 5 dice beams, you have two hit and runs, and each movement from the hit and run is giving you a place of a friendly character. So two moves, two attacks with extra dice, two place effects.
Nope, I'm out. Next card.
That's not good enough for you?
It's not 27.
It's definitely not 27. How do you feel about Iceman and Emma Frost together? Obviously both X-Men. Emma Frost has a good X-Men card. Could you see that working out?
Well, this is an unaffiliated card.
Yeah.
Do you like Emma Frost and X-Men?
I don't love her, but I know plenty of people that do. Our buddy Gil Serepi, host of the WTC, adores her in X-Men and has terrorized me with her before. So I've got a healthy respect for her. By the way,
I personally don't like Emma outside of Hellfire. I have been spoiled rotten.
I think we can get to Hellfire in just a second, but I just wanted to mention, it popped into my mind. I received many messages from people after last week's episode when I said that Jean Grey and Professor X were the only people that could use Cerebro, but Emma Frost can as well.
She's an X-Man. I stand by my initial statement of you'd have to be playing Emma Frost in X-Men.
Yeah, so you obviously can, and I think that's all right. And I think if you're playing those two characters together, untapped potential is a fun card. I think you could consider playing Iceman in Hellfire Club to use this card. I don't hate that. But, I mean, if Iceman was a bit tougher, I think he'd be a fantastic Hellfire Club member. As it is, I'd be a bit worried about keeping him alive. But maybe that's the team with the stupid defense gimmicks. Maybe Iceman is Hellfire Club's new researcher tech.
Nope, I was here for shenanigans. You ruined my shenanigans by pointing out I still need actions. I'm out.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. So, can we talk about Xavier? Xavier's dream?
Yes, we can. This is the money card in the set. Oh, boy.
It certainly is. Yeah, Uncanny X-Men reactive card. When an allied character would suffer damage, any number of other allied characters may each spend one power to play this card. For each power spent to play this card, reduce the damage the allied character would suffer by one. That's pretty good, Pat.
It's great. Couple of callouts with this card. It uses the word allied a lot. Doesn't say affiliated.
Which makes most, it even better.
Yeah. Most affiliated tactics cards for affiliations only work with members of that affiliation. This one doesn't. Right? This one doesn't care. And it's a very good damage reduction card. It's a variation on something like Odin's Blessing. Doesn't work exactly the same way. In order to get the most out of this, you need to have a little bit of power spread across your team. But of course, the core game mechanics support that in a lot of situations. And it can really help you to ensure that your characters survive long enough to be impactful.
Yeah, just a couple things I want to shout out is like, Odin's Blessing is great. Odin's Blessing costs three. Sometimes you'll Xavier's Dream just for one, just to prevent that daze or KO. And also, you don't need Xavier. He doesn't need to be here. This is just his dream. He doesn't need to be around. You just need to be playing X-Men. I think this card is absolutely phenomenal. And will I be buying a box just for a card? Probably. It's not the first time I've done this. Won't be the last. I think it's really good. I do want to paint Shadowcat. I'm excited to paint Shadowcat.
Yeah, look, if you're going to use this card, you can definitely be using one of Shadowcat or Iceman alongside it. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like the dream a lot. Like we talked about, like Nightcrawler, I really like. Well, I like, other than he blows up. I mean, this certainly helps him not blow up occasionally. I'm a big fan of this card. I just think it's, I don't think it's super fun to talk about, but I think it will always be useful in your game. It'll always be impactful. You're denying your opponent power. Mm-hmm. You're possibly denying him a daze or KO trigger, and you're saving one of your own models. I think this card is just monstrous.
Yeah, I think it's very strong. Worth calling out that spending a power across your characters is still quite a lot of power for this to reduce a good amount of damage. Mm-hmm. It's not strictly better than Odin's Blessing by any means, right? You are saving a character, but you're down a lot of power because they're not generating power from the damage that's being prevented, and your team is losing a lot of power. And you can be in situations where that price is too high, where you save your character, but you're condemning all of your other characters to have subpar activations, where that point of power might matter to them a lot. It's not going to come up that often, but it's something to bear in mind.
No, but a good shout out to that would be like, if you are saving a character on turn one because something has gone hideously awry and you didn't see a drag, you might be completely neutering your turn one to save that character.
Exactly.
Like, you are no longer interacting. And instead you have a character who's not dazed. It's like, you probably should have just taken the daze there and moved on. But later on, like a key objective someone's holding, like there can be backbreaking. And I agree, it's not... Odin's only targeting Asgard is the biggest thing for me. Odin's also, you always take one damage off Odin's, right? Xavier's theoretically can blank something out.
It can, and that can really matter for things like power generation from the opposing character or effects, special effects of the attack that trigger on damage. That can be a big deal. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, we've been talking about Odin's, but you know the card that's identical to Odin's Blessing? Exceptional Healing. And that's a card that X-Men love. Right, and you can have X-Men teams very happily playing these two effects side by side and causing a real nightmare for your opponent if they want to damage you.
The only thing I've seen about Xavier's Dream that I do want to shout out is the person taking the damage can't pay. It's other characters. So those are, I think, the last clarification I want to say. I think this card's phenomenal. I don't think there's any dispute about that. I think we'd both be sleeving this in a heartbeat.
Yeah, the reason I like the two together is because... If you're like the way to get around exceptional healing is you attack the character when they don't have three power. And this card works when that target doesn't have three power because you spend it on your other models, right? And then when your target does have a lot of power, hey, you can play healing instead and you can save this. You could even combo them together over a course of a couple of attacks or what have you. So I like that a lot. The only thing it doesn't save you from is massive overkill, which is something that exceptional Odins do help.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to Xavier's through a Helios or something. But you, again, like you said, you could play them together, couldn't you?
You could.
I'm not saying it's a good decision, but...
Yeah, it might be a bit much to play both on one attack. But if you absolutely want to turn a Helios laser into zero damage, you could do that.
So yeah, anyway, I think it's a really good card. I think we both do.
Yeah, I think this is a slam dunk. I would be taking this... in every single X-Men 10, and you would be hard-pressed to convince me not to take it in my 5.
All right. Pat, is there anything else you want to say about good old Box 96?
So this is the end of our 3 X-Men box reviews, TT. We've gone through each of them. Which do you think is the most exciting?
The most exciting?
Exciting. Capital X.
I see what you did there. I don't know. That's a good...
I'm putting you on the spot.
You did. I like bits and pieces out of every box. I don't know that one I think stands out above the others for me. Probably Nightcrawler, if I had to pick.
Nightcrawler was your favorite character, but I like Nightcrawler way more than you. I had to convince you that Nightcrawler was good. You just want to play Mass Transit all day.
I think this tells you what I feel about the three boxes in general. Like, I
oh dear.
I think they each have good things in them. I just don't think any of them blow me away.
All right, so we'll do it. We've got three awards. Reward number one, best character.
Oh, Shadow King.
Shadow King? He's just trolling me now. Okay.
Okay. Best character is Nightcrawler. Do we agree?
Okay. Award number two, best tactics card.
I think it has to be Xavier's Dream.
Okay. Award number three, best leadership.
What?
Best leadership.
Best leadership? How many leaderships did we get?
Just one.
That's what I thought. I was like, is Shadow King have a leadership? I don't remember. I guess it's Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters.
Great. So there's something useful in every box.
Best model in a wheelchair, Pat. Which one?
Well, none of them have a wheelchair. Xavier's got a hover chair.
That's a wheelchair.
Okay. Well, in any case.
Yeah, a medium moving wheelchair.
This wave is interesting, right? Because there's lots of things that are pretty good. Nothing that knocks our socks off. I think the most independently powerful thing of all three of these box reviews back to back is Xavier's Dream.
100%.
Yeah, that's like the most powerful thing in all this release wave. And then the characters are all solid, right? I think they're playable, but I probably Nightcrawler was the one that we'll see the most play. So I agree with you on that point as well.
Yeah, I think Nightcrawler is the best character. I think the rest are kind of clumped into a band of, it's fine. If you want to take them, it's fine.
Band of mediocrity.
Yeah, let's go. All right. Well, hey, we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening to the podcast. You can let us know everything we got wrong over on Discord, across the bifrost.com/Discord. You can find all of our work at acrossthebifrost.com and the work of so many others. We do want to sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening to the podcast. And Pat from the City of Lights, me just out here in Mile High, Colorado, we want to wish you, until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.